Yeah, welcome back, my friends, to the broadcast. It is Eric DeBreeze, streamer on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Thank you for joining us tonight. Tonight we are going to have Lori Anderson, if all goes well. Before we get to Lori, I want to revisit one brief issue last night. And the reason I want to revisit it is because I must have pushed a button and it wasn't on my phone. because as soon as I started talking about the New York State Constitutional Convention to open up the state Constitution for the state of New York, and if anybody thinks that the political prostitutes and Wall Street banker attorney frontmen in Albany are going to somehow do the right thing and restore, you know, do anything positive for the people, you're dreaming. It will get rid of the last few little teeny weeny slivers of liberty that we have in this state under the state constitution of New York. And by the way, I think it's Article 1, Section 10 says that New York State, since 1775 when it was a colony and 1777 when it became a state and blah, 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 and as of amended as of 2012 or 2014, is still under common law. And so just a little extra piece of ammunition you can use in your paperwork if you have to go into the witch's court. I mean, I recommend stay out at all costs. Don't let yourself get sucked in on this notion that you're going to use the system against it. Occasionally you can. Find a weak spot. If they're violating their own codes, rules, and regulations and statutes, okay, great. Cite that in your, so we're not under any illusions that anything is a magic, you know, pill, so to speak, but citing the article in the New York State Constitution, I think it's Article 1, Section 10, but somebody can call and confirm that for me. It would be helpful. I don't have a computer in front of me right now. But, and it says this, New York's still under common law, and under common law there has to be a victim to a crime. The state cannot be a victim. Furthermore, if you're going to claim that the state, which is a fictitious entity, is somehow victimized in a criminal action by the state against an individual, then that would be a fraud upon the court, wouldn't it? And just tell the judge you're not willing to perpetrate a fraud upon the court. Is the court willing to perpetrate a fraud? Is the state going to perpetrate a fraud and claim that a fictitious entity it can somehow be a victim? I mean, nice try. That's what they're claiming. That's what they're going to do. Don't let them have your mind. Don't let them have the language. So anyway, in this New York State, one of the initiatives that they're going to try to push through, if the state constitutional convention gets voted yay instead of nay, and it's up to the people, can vote to either have it or not. And so I encourage everybody in New York you want to do something activist, you get out there and tell everybody to vote absolutely not on any constitutional convention. And furthermore, we want the provisions for common law. And, you know, everything else to be honored before we go trying to fix what's our, you know, they're not even honoring the Constitution we have. Like, they're going to, I'm sure they're going to honor the new one that they're going to whip up, because it's going to be favorable only to the state and only to the governing entities and the powers that be in the business community that pretty much steer the government. And we know who's bought and paid for, pretty much all of them. So, anyway, one of the issues on the table is no more elected judges appointed. And as soon as I said that last night, my call got cut off, and I managed to get back in. Thank you to Chris for covering for me. But they don't want people to know that it's very important. The New York State political prostitutes in Albany are going to try to make it so judges are no longer elected. They're appointed. And this is why we're having the trouble we're having in Nevada with a lot of these federal judges are appointed. They're not elected. So they could think they could get away with whatever they want. The people have absolutely no power or whatever to pull them out of office by voting somebody else in. So that last little sliver of recourse that we have through the ballot box, you know, and I'm not under any illusions there's any difference between the political parties. But once again, even just voting for these people on an individual case-by-case basis, it's you have some chance when you have the vote. You have none when you don't. Okay, so there's the long and short. So I wanted to just urge people to pay attention to what's going on in New York. In Florida, they amended the habeas corpus clause during their last state constitutional convention. They changed, and this is how a couple of words can change history and can destroy lives. It said in the standard Florida constitution, just like the federal, just like the one for the United States of America, it says the right of something to the effect of the right of habeas corpus shall be preserved or shall not be denied unless in times of insurrection or rebellion. So that's the only time that you can deny somebody a habeas corpus, which is a lawful document that says, show me the person you're holding and show me the victim of their crime. And the system has 3 to 5 days to honor that or they're in default. And I've had habeas corpuses work before. I've seen them buried and not work at all. So, but it is still recourse, and the courts still do honor it in New York, but usually only if an attorney brings it forward. So, and that's very unfortunate. So, because I can write a decent habeas corpus, and I have. So, and anybody can. We got one right up on the website. Just go to courtroomwatch.org. That's courtroomwatch.org or .com. Courtroom Watch has that somewhere in there. We did a habeas corpus, I think, for the Bundys when they first, this was a little while back, a year or two ago. And that one was pretty good. It's got some teeth in there and some remedy and some penalty, which most habeas corpuses don't have. You don't put something in there that says if you don't honor this habeas corpus, you're in default and you owe us money, then what good is it? Put some teeth in there. Of course, everybody got sketchy. I don't know. We wouldn't want to, you know, piss off the judge. Oh, okay, well, if you're going to go that routine, have a nice stay in the witch's jail. So, but anyway, I urge people to, you know, do whatever they can in their paperwork. Don't hold anything back. But the problem is, as soon as you get an attorney, they're going to say, no, don't do that. You can't file any paperwork on your own. I have to do it. We can't do that. We wouldn't want to piss off the judge, blah, 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 blah. So anyway, I wanted to remind people that we need to preserve at least this this potential to have some justice in New York, which is keep the elected judges, no appointed judges. And one of the guys I was talking to said, you know, there's strange bedfellows in this New York State Constitutional Convention thing. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, the unions and the NRA are both together, joined at the hip, they want the New York State Constitutional Convention because we know who the unions work for and we know who the NRA works for. I mean, how far, in their own words last night, I quoted them. It said, despite the fact that Obama administration approved bump stocks, the NRA thinks that we ought to have first take hold of the BATF and make it bigger, more another federal agency, stronger and bigger, and go and more gun regulations. Oh, of course, in the interest of public safety and public security. You want to talk about communism? Oh my, the NRA is completely down the toilet. You want to join a good group? Gun Owners of America is solid. Larry Pratt's a relatively decent guy. Really, he's about 90% of the way there, and that's excellent. That really is as good as you're going to get with anybody. A little neocon around the edge a little bit still. We won't go down, you know, a little bit too heavy on the, you know, he's not going to talk too much about the CIA or the Mossad and the MI6, but, you know, that's all right. At least he's talking Constitution. All gun legislation is an infringement. Any gun legislation is an infringement. Shall means cannot. You will not. It doesn't mean maybe or figure out later or have the document all of a sudden grow lungs and be a living, breathing document. The word says this, and this is what simple is best. And no constitutional conventions in New York, that's for sure. Or on the national level. It's a big mistake. They're not going to let average people like you or me sit on that constitutional convention. We tried to get it to happen. Bob Schultz, God bless him, argued in front of the New York State Supreme Court. I videoed it. And he did a great job arguing. We had about 20 or 30 people there. And he argued that people from the community, regular people like us, need to be on that constitutional convention if it's going to take place. Not just a bunch of attorneys out of Wall Street and Albany the same scumbags that have been destroying this state with things like the SAFE Act, under which people like Shane Bennett are still languishing in prison for a couple more years, and it's very unfortunate. Once again, better not only know about, but make sure the people around you know about jury nullification, because it may be the only thing that saves your rear end if you get dragged into the witch's court. With that, we're going to see if we have Lori Anderson tonight. Lori, are you with us?
I am. How are you doing this evening?
Awesome. Thanks for joining us, Lori. I'm going to turn it over to you and go on mute and just listen and enjoy whatever you have to talk about.
Oh, absolutely. I've got some. First, I want to say thank you, Eric, for what you were pointing out, and I wanted to respond to the common law in the New York State Constitution's Article 1, Section 14. And I'll read it for you, since you don't have it in front of you. It states...
Awesome. Lori, hold on one second. This is awesome. I'm really glad you're going to do it slowly and get right nice clear, because once in a while when you pull back away from your mic, you tend to fade out a little bit. And this is very valuable information. Once again, Lori Anderson. That's Lori with two R's. You can find her anywhere on the Internet. Back to you, Lori.
Well, you know, I have to collect the state constitutions, Eric.
Mm-hmm.
I said, you know, I have to collect those state constitutions, so it wasn't
hard
to pull it out for you.
Awesome. We're looking forward to hearing this. Yeah, and it's a very interestingly written. It's very simple, and it's old school, but updated recently, and it seems to have teeth. Now, I want people to listen carefully and then call in and see if you think that there's an escape route for the system, which there always seems to be in their legalese, but it's pretty close to what we could use, at least to require the court to do something close to a common law tribunal instead of an admiralty law tribunal. Go ahead, Lori.
Absolutely. So Article 1, Section 14, which is the Bill of Rights section of the New York State Constitution, states this, quote, such parts of the common law and of the acts of the legislature of the colony of New York, as together did form the law of said colony, on the 19th day of April, 1775, and the resolutions of the Congress of the said colony, and of the Convention of the State of New York, in force on the 20th day of April, 1777, which have not since expired or been repealed or altered, and such acts of the legislature of this state as are now in force, shall be and continue the law of this state, subject to such alterations as the legislature shall make concerning the same. But all such parts of the common law and such of the said acts or parts thereof as are repugnant to this Constitution are hereby abrogated. Formerly the Section 16, renumbered and amended by the Constitutional Convention, 1938, and approved by vote of the people, November the 8th of 1938.
Awesome. That beautiful. Now I got it. I'm really glad I can listen to you read it and not stand there and look at the words, stare at the words myself, because it gives it me a chance to just kind of just step back and hear the, they clearly state in that we are under common law, and then, of course, they give themselves a little but, which can be, you know, adjusted and amended by the acts of the legislature. Of course, that leaves open, wide open the barn door for any corporate whore maneuver for them to come in and just, you know, do, but then it goes back and says, however, if anything you try to do, Mr. Attorney Prostitute in Albany, is an abrogation of this Constitution, then it's null and void. Once again, like Marbury versus Madison, it's null and void, it's a nullity, it doesn't count. So they kind of bounce forth, back, and then forth again, to me that's crystal clear, and it covers that escape route that the legislature was looking for to do whatever they want to do to us through acts of legislation that they somehow think is law.
Absolutely. It amazes me how they continue to do things like this. Well, I want to kind of say something, Eric. We're going to have we're going to have a lot of information come out tonight, which, of course, goes along with everything we've been covering, from the Uranium One to the connection with the Patriots, and the different issues. Lori is going to be joining us in just a little bit to give us an update on Tom. Tom had a court appearance on the 24th, and so she's going to be on to update us as to what went on and what's going on with that. And I thank her for her time coming in and doing that, because I know she's really busy and she's really trying to do her best to help Tom as well as stay afloat, you know. But I want to say this. A lot of people don't realize this. I want to say happy one-year anniversary to Ammon Bundy, Ryan Bundy, Neil Wampler, Kenneth Medenbach, Shauna Cox, Jeff Banta, and David Fry. Do you have any clue, Eric, what I'm talking about?
Is it the 1 year? Don't tell me it's been a year since they walked on the federal charges in Oregon, where jury nullification shined through like the star, like the shining star.
It has been 1 year today since they were acquitted of all charges in the Oregon court case.
Okay, amazing time. Oh, boy, that really illustrates how time flies, but how sad it is that they walked on the federal charges that were similar to what they're facing now, and the witches' court scoops them right back up. The street Nazis, the U.S. marsupials, come in and scoop them right back up and stick them in the witches' prison with no bail. Only under capital murder charges can you legally and lawfully hold somebody with no bail. These guys aren't accused. Not only are they not accused of killing anybody, they're not accused of touching. They're not accused of killing a fly. Nothing. They're accused of disobedience to militarized ecclesiastic tribunal dictates. That's really all it is. And, and the fact that Trump is letting this go on is just sickening. Is this something to do with patriotism?
Just wait.
Oh, boy.
I've got more that's going to make you smile, Eric. But I do want to say this in that, though. You're right. They weren't accused of harming a fly. But, you know, a lot of people are saying, oh, this is a First Amendment issue. It is a First Amendment issue, but it's not just freedom of speech, Eric. People forget the First Amendment covers five different things. Okay? This First Amendment issue, when it comes to the, whether it be Occupy Mau here or whether it be the Bundy Ranch standoff, right? It is freedom of speech. It is freedom of the press. It is freedom of assembly, to peaceably assemble. It is a injustice about the redress of grievances.
I was
all
just going to say that.
In First Amendment, and all of that's been smashed, and people just keep talking about the freedom of speech. Let's talk about all those others, because I've got a lot of news to hand to tonight.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Lamp is burning low upon my tabletop. The snow is softly falling. The air is still in the silence of my room. I hear your voice softly calling. If I could only have you near to breathe a sigh or two, I would be happy just to hold the hands I love on this winter night with you.
Welcome back to the broadcast, my friends. Welcome back. It's Eric the Freedom Stickman. You've got to love this Gordon Lightfoot. Nothing like an acoustic 12. Lori Anderson, back to you.
Well, I thought on the one-year anniversary I would play and share with some people of things that probably have never been heard. Mike, if you would get LV1 ready. Now, let me let you know what I found. And this is just to show not only that what we keep teaching you and showing you, and this is if you are a new listener, that we do know what we are talking about when we say the federal government is not allowed to own land. They're allowed to own forts, forts, needful buildings, such as post offices and things like that, arsenals, dockyards, national security issues. But as far as owning land, they are not allowed to own it. At one point, the federal government was holding the land as territories until those territories became a state. Once they became a state, they came in under what was called the Equal Footing Doctrine, which means they had all of the same rights as the original 13 states in the Union. And the federal government no longer had any rights to that land. They never owned it. They held it as if they were an estate holder for the individual until they got older or until they did what they needed to do to become a state, and then it got turned over to them. However, I found a very interesting clip, and I think this is really relevant to the one-year anniversary. And this is the first time I had ever heard or saw this clip, actually. This is a clip all the way. This is a flashback to June 29th of 2015 out of Mesquite, Nevada. And what this is Ryan Bundy asking Senator Rand Paul about the federal government's unlawful ownership of land in the states, and what he would do if he became president. Why do I feel like this is important? Because number one, with the answer, you see that they confirm, once again, they have no authority to do so. It is unlawful. But not only that, I do this for the one-year anniversary of the great win against tyranny and oppression on that day in Oregon when all those defendants were found not guilty. Mike, if you would please play LV1.
My name's Ryan Bundy. I'm the son of Clive and Bundy. I assume you know who we are. And I'm very fond of your father, Rand. So that's glad to hear. I see here, when you talk about civil liberties, I pulled up some information on you, and it says that the usurpation of power by our current federal government would make our founding fathers roll over in their graves. And I believe you're right. The issues that standoff and so forth that took place here a year ago, which brought to light some important things. One major thing is that there is simply no place in the United States Constitution that allows the federal government to own land, period. What are you going to do as president to correct that problem?
I'd either sell or turn over all the land management to the states. I don't think the federal government needs to be involved in that. The biggest revenue raisers for the Treasury back in like the 1830s, 1840s was selling Western land. That's how a lot of our ancestors got here, is through land sales. And it was pretty cheap to buy land from the federal government. But we run into problems now with the federal government being, this bully and this big, huge government bully. You would have less of that if you had more local control of land. State ownership would be better, but even better would be private ownership. And so I think we should do everything possible. Like all the stuff that you had to deal with the grouse or the prairie chicken or the bigger chicken, the lesser chicken, and all that stuff. You wouldn't have that problem if you were dealing with it locally, because what you would decide is, well, yeah, we want to preserve nature, but we also want to preserve jobs and the economy, and there would be a balance. And sometimes I'll say flippantly, if you sold the chicken to somebody, there'd be plenty of them. And there's certain truth to that. When things are owned, there's lots of cows. No, the cows are not endangered. These are chickens, really. Sagebrush, grouse would be probably less likely to be endangered if somebody owned it allowed it to reproduce. So there are ways of handling it, but we've actually taken the Endangered Species Act, and we say that should be done also. And then it would be your community. You decide what to do. And there still would be arguments back and forth over exactly what we do and how we protect species. But we just went crazy on all that stuff. In Kentucky, we have the pocketbook muscle. And so it was a little tiny town. And when it rained, their sewage plant was falling off, that the raw sewage would go into the lake. Well, nobody wanted that. I don't care whether you're Republican or Democrat. Nobody wants sewage in the lake. So they said, we're going to build a bigger sewage plant. The federal government came and said, oh, no, you don't. We need to find out whether the bigger sewage plant, how it will affect the pocketbook muscle that grows in the lake. It's like, we're trying to prevent stuff from going in the lake. But they end up spending $100,000, this tiny little town that had no money, on a consultant to count the sagebrush, pocketbook muscle. Then they found an arrowhead, and then they had to do an archaeological dig. So the government's gone way too far. I'll tell you one other story about what the government's done and how the government can really be a bully. Robert Lucas was a landowner in the southern part of Mississippi. He was developing lots, and he decided to put dirt on his lots to improve the elevation of the lots. The government came and said, oh, no, it's a wetland. And he said, well, there's no water. There's 300 different ways that the government can tell you have a wetland. 300 different plants that they can look for. They can take a soil sample and measure the percentage of water in the soil. They don't have to see water for it to be a wetland. They also can turn leaves over. If the leaves are black on the bottom, you might have a wetland. So here's the problem. The government took something reasonable, and I'm not against all government regulations. There was a Clean Water Act in the 70s that says you can't discharge pollutants into a navigable stream. Well, I don't want people dumping benzene into Lake Tahoe or the Mississippi River. Most of us don't want that. But the thing is, over time, they define dirt as a pollutant, and your backyard as a navigable stream. So government just grew so large and became such a bully on this. Anyway, Robert Lucas did this. They put him in jail for 10 years for putting dirt on his own land. They convicted him under the RICO Act, which is supposed to be used for, like, gangsters and drug dealers. His daughter was 43, had never, ever committed any crime, a speeding ticket, had a two-year-old daughter at home. She had 84 months in jail. They let her out after 26 months, over 2 years in prison for just trying to sell lots and be an entrepreneur in our country. So we have gone way too far, and it is time that we stand up in a legal fashion, but we stand up and let's say enough's enough. Let's elect people who will get the government off our back.
Okay. So with that being said, reported today, President Donald Trump will shrink one of the largest national monuments designated during the Obama administration, according to the Utah Senator Orrin Hatch. I am approving the Bears Ears recommendation for you, Orrin, Trump told Hatch during a Friday phone call, according to the senator. Trump said that he would follow Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke's recommendation to shrink the size of the Bears Ear National Monument. I was incredibly grateful when the president called this morning to let us know that he is approving Secretary Zinke's recommendation on Bears Ears, Hatch said in a statement. Hatch has been pushing for the Trump administration to shrink the Bears Ear Monument in southeastern Utah, which former President Barack Obama created in 2016. Bears Ears is one of the least three national monuments that Zinke recommended Trump alter. Zinke submitted his recommendations in August, the result of a lengthy review of the potential Antiquities Act abuses ordered by Trump. Zinke also recommended shrinking Utah's Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument, which former President Bill Clinton created. Protecting sacred antiquities is a matter of critical importance, and Secretary Zinke and the Trump administration found a better way to do it by rolling up their sleeves, digging in, and talking with Native American tribes, Hatch said. We'll continue working closely with locals moving forward to ensure that Utahans have a voice in this process, Hatch said. It is unclear how much Trump will shrink the Bears Ears monument through the White House press secretary, Sarah Huckabee Sanders said. More details will come out during the president's upcoming visit to Utah. Bears Ears encompasses 1,351,849 acres, making it one of the largest land-based monuments ever created. Republicans said Obama had gone beyond what he is authorized to do under the Antiquities Act, which gives the president authority to designate monuments. The GOP said that Obama improperly put large swaths of land under stricter federal control. The Antiquities Act stipulates that monuments in all cases shall be confined to the smallest area compatible with proper care and management of the objects to be protected. I am not going to continue reading the rest of this article. You can find this on thedailycaller.com, or you can go to laurieanderson.com on my Google Plus Resurrect the Republic collection, and it will be in there. The reason I am excited about this is finally something's being done. Now, in all reality, constitutionally speaking, they don't have a right to do a national monument in the first place, but shrinking that, and obviously if they were to really look, the 1,300 over 1 million acres that was designated as that national monument, if you will, which Obama really liked and Bill Clinton really liked, I bet you it all is rich in uranium, and I bet it goes right back to this Uranium One scandal, which, of course, goes back to our patriots. It goes back to our guys. It goes back to our political prisoners sitting in jail. It goes back to the Hammonds. It goes back to each and every individual who refused to bow to tyranny, who refused to not speak out. And for those individuals, I am thankful. I am really thankful. And I just wanted to let everyone know that was just put out today about the national monument. We are looking forward to him abolishing the one in Gold Butte, which Obama did right before he left office, right over there by Clive and Bundy's ranch. So with that being said, I'm going to go ahead and pull Lori on. I believe we do have Lori on, so she can give us an update on Thomas Lacovara. He is the creator and original host of Resurrect the Republic, RTR Truth Radio broadcast, an amazing individual. We miss him very much, and we are sitting in and until he comes back. So with that being said, Lori, are you there, and how are you doing this evening?
I'm here, and I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much. We're excited to get some updates about Tom and what is going on.
Well, first, I want to thank our creator that gave his only son so that we have the information we need to fight this fight. And that's the first clue I'm going to give a lot of people. And then I want to thank everybody that's given me access to their home, financial support, prayers, moral support. I want to thank everybody from the bottom of my heart. It hasn't been easy, but we're getting through this. A lot of what we're saying is coming a lot clearer to me. We're missing the mark on some of the things we're doing, and we're right on the mark on other things that we're doing from what I'm seeing. That's just my opinion and my personal experience. These courts, one of the key things that you have to do, and I want to say this before I give the update on Thomas, so that people can understand why I am saying things the way I am and why I'm being so stern and harsh about behavior and how we have to act. It's very, very important. We're not going to whine about things. We're not going to be a victim. We're going to get ourselves educated, and we're going to take care of these issues. One of the key things with these courts is you need to know how to act, and a lot of us don't know how to act. The court that I'm dealing with has been given the paperwork. They know who I am and what I'll stand for. So they do act accordingly. In saying that, Thomas had a court date on Wednesday the 24th, and I've got the paperwork in front of me. And in that paperwork, I'm going to read this. The defendant is hereby committed to the custody of the Federal Bureau of Prisons to be imprisoned for a term of time served. Saying that, he is still sitting in Sheridan Prison down in Oregon. There was another clause in his orders that he is going to go to a halfway house for a term of days after his imprisonment. They do not have the room. So they put him back in prison. They have him as released. And there's several issues and several things that happens when these factors happen. I think it's very important that we don't do a call-in. We don't get upset, because I'm going to give everybody a timeline of events, how I acted and how the courts, the jail, and his probation officer have acted. I've got more news for you, Lori, that you're going to be pleased with.
Okay.
In this, there are a lot of men sitting in the prisons that have been sentenced to time served. They're sitting waiting for halfway houses. That is a moneymaker for judges, their friends, things of that nature. It may be a good step. It may not. It's one of their little pest subject things that they do with the men that are in prison. If you're under the 13th Amendment and you're a prisoner, they can do that to you. That's in our Constitution. So we don't have a leg to stand on that one. That's just how it is. And these are the things we need to accept. Facts are facts. We were all born into this. And whether you were born on one side or the other, or woke up on one side or the other, it doesn't make a hill of beans. What is, and this is the reality. Thomas is sitting in Sheridan in Oregon right now. Thomas is sitting in Oregon right now. And he is awaiting a room. The prison, when they were called and notified what was going on, that he has been sentenced to time served and some other issues that are going on with his health that they are by law to take care of and have not, they ignored me. I had his probation officer call the judge. The only thing you can really get a judge on is their behavior. And this judge, in this case, had excellent behavior. Not 100% complete, but excellent behavior. This is Judge Anna Aiken that sentenced the Hammonds back to prison. When things are done correctly and improved, we as the people need to stand up and start saying they are doing it right. They have done things in the past that are wrong, but we must say they are doing it right. And Judge Aiken at this point is making some good steps.
Okay.
When she was called and notified of Thomas's illness, which she was not notified, she got quite upset. She was not notified of what was going on. She was not notified of the full facts. She immediately let the prison know that they needed to immediately find him a room. They found him a room, Lloyd. He will, in the next 5 days, be placed in a halfway house.
Praise God.
I know. So he does have a room. I've also had to call late this afternoon after we talked today and say he has not received his medications. He has not received any treatment since his court date, since he was moved from the county jail. He has since called me since we talked about an hour ago and said they are starting to give him some of his medications.
Praise God.
Okay. Now, what we need to do and what we need to start doing as people with our friends and family in jail is we need to start getting educated and find out who has the responsibility, where it's coming from, stop being the victim, and that's the natural thing to do. I've had to, during this journey, really chew a lot of people out and really praise a lot of people. I'm not going to say I'm sorry for it. I'm going to stand up and do the right thing. And if I sound like I'm talking down to people, I'm not. I'm going to sound stern because the only way to educate you is to tell you like it is. And it's hard because I'm living it as well as thousands of other people around this country. And it's not easy.
Amen.
Okay? So who is responsible for their health when they're in the federal system? It's the U.S. Marshals. And the key thing in the U.S. Marshals, when you look up the U.S. Marshals Service, over their defendants in custody and prisoner management. Under medical care, the Marshals Service relies on state and local jails as well as the Bureau of Prisons Detention Facilities to provide medical care inside the facilities. However, the Marshals Service is responsible for providing a secure escort and paying for care when a prisoner must go to a medical facility in the local community. Now, they are responsible. Judge knows this. They are responsible to make sure, since he is in the U.S. Marshal custody, not the prison system.
Mm-hmm.
The U.S. Marshals right now are responsible, have a duty of honor and respect to provide that medical care to Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
That's the responsible party, not the judge and not the prison. Even though those are the ones I have to call and alert, because there's not someone in the Marshal Service that's going to help me out at all.
Mm-hmm.
The judge ultimately responsible, even if the case is closed. She now is over his probation.
Mm-hmm.
Judge can issue an order.
So let me ask you this. Let me just make sure that I understand this correctly by giving an analogy, okay, Lori? So when Tom, before he went to federal prison, when he was in a regular jail, okay, because he was on that courtesy hold by the U.S. Marshals, even though he was being held by the local sheriff there, that would still be falling under the U.S. Marshals that would have been responsible for making sure it was paid for his medical condition because they were the reason he was held there. Is that correct?
Correct. He was always on a U.S. Marshals hold when he was in the county prisons.
Okay.
Okay, so anybody going through that, there's a bit of information. The key thing is to keep your cool and be respectful. The judge knows who I am. I've made my appearance via paper. She knows exactly who I am. I never went out and did crazy paperwork. I didn't go before them and talk nonsense. I went and made sure it was solid, whatever I gave them. Mm-hmm. And didn't say, oh, I'm going to go one way and then another. I chose one route and went one route.
Mm-hmm.
there were other circumstances that were involved, and this is the way they chose to go, the parties to be. Some of the decisions were Thomas's, and that's for him to discuss with you as to why he made his decisions. I'm not going to speak for him on those behalf.
Right.
Make sure you go one way and one way only. You cannot keep changing the manner in which you approach the court.
Right.
When you go to the court, must go with respect and not have anything. You are considered a belligerent. You are considered someone else. And in combat with them, it is an adversarial system. But that system is a system as in, you know, the knights, chivalry. You have to have a certain standard of decorum and behavior. And so when a lot of people don't stand, behavior doesn't mean you're a two-year-old and I'm going to, you know, slap your hand because you were bad. Behavior means the way you carry yourself, that you are of the age of majority and you are competent. And you must do that. If you're going out and you're doing things that are downright incompetent, they're going to look at you and laugh going, I'm not going to listen to you. That's what's happening to a lot of these people that are in court right now. And I went to some of the courtroom episodes, as I call them, with these people. I sat, I watched them. They never rebutted the claims. They never understood or comprehended what the judge was saying. They sat there, they were very confused, and when you tried to explain to them what was going on, the judges were doing as they were supposed to do. The judges were, in the cases I saw, and I saw the last case of the four in Portland, that judge was on her best behavior and did everything she was allowed to do. And that's hard to take. It's hard to take that those attorneys, and I know their position as well, did not rebut the claims they needed to rebut. And there were four men sentenced. And, or they're going for sentencing here very soon. It was very hard to watch and sit in that courtroom and be quiet. But that's the behavior you have to have. And if the people that are actually involved don't listen, you have to sit back and let your heart break. Some of this is what I had to do with Thomas. He didn't understand, and the attorney was going to run over me. I fought a lot of this on my own, and this is how it is. If we don't band together and we don't stop playing the games, this is what's going to happen. We have a man who was sentenced, time served, sitting in jail. Not only one, there's quite a few, and there are men there. From Thomas's words, that have been there for several weeks waiting. The only reason he has made the progress he has, not because of his attorney, but because he has someone that they know is very competent and has been very kind to them and has not played games. And I'm not playing games now. There's a reason why I said I won't comment, I won't PM people, I won't take phone calls on this, is because it is still a flowing situation. We're still trying to get Thomas out, but from what I'm seeing, they are moving mountains to get him where he needs to go to get this progress flowing the way it needs to be. They're not sitting still. And that's because they're being prodded in the appropriate manner. I'm not whining. I'm not sitting there and threatening. I'm telling them, this is how it is, and this is what needs to be done. I understand that you made a decision that you can't live up to. You've broken a contract. You need to fulfill your end contract and allow them time to do it. They are going very, very fast to make this happen. So this is what's going on. Thomas does have a room now. He is starting to receive medication as of an hour ago. The problem that I have right now, when any of these men or women are in a federal prison and they are released, if you look up Thomas on the Board of Prisons, it will say he's released or on a U.S. Marshal hold. What happens is that turns off their communications, their phones, their commissary, in order for me to get funds to him, it has to go snail mail to Des Moines, Iowa. I did call the warden's office. They did click back on his communications. He does have a little bit of funds to call me very, very briefly and very quickly so that I know he's okay and what the progress is. I am getting calls very quickly. He did get the word that the judge was upset with what was going on and called me and told me the judge was upset. The prison, the judge, and everyone else in their way are sending me messages without having to talk to me directly, which is good behavior and the way it should work, that they are listening. They hear us. We don't need to make phone calls. We don't need to get upset. It's not something we like. It's not something that's appropriate, but it's reality, and we have to deal with it. The other issues we can take care of when Thomas is out. They're in trouble, and they and I think a lot of these judges realize the uranium one, with the information getting out, something's up. I did see on CNN about 5 minutes ago that the first of the indictments are out, and Monday the arrests should start happening.
Oh, praise God.
I know. So my advice to people, because I have an advantage over thousands of people because John has given us this avenue to talk on and to communicate with people.
Yes.
Educate yourself. Talk to those that are educated. They will help you out. And when they tell you something, go research it. Start reading. And when someone's talking to you and it sounds like they're talking down to you, they're not. They're toughening you up for the court. They're trying to tell you how to speak. They're trying to tell you something. They're not talking down to you. They've taken the time to read thousands and thousands and thousands of pages, hundreds of books, statutes, codes. The Bible is a key factor in this. Whether you're faithful or not, that is your key to this whole thing. Go and do your research. Learn what you have to do, and you won't be stuck in the situation like Thomas is or the other men, because people, I'm going to tell you, there were a lot of people like me that went and talked to these guys, and they wouldn't listen to us. They would not hear us. And now they're in jail. They're trying some of these things, and they still won't listen to us. And they're making the mistakes by the ones in the past that suffered in jail, just like they are. And you never heard them because they didn't have an avenue to say, I'm being beaten. I'm not getting my medicines. I'm not eating decent food. We have that avenue. And we are very, very blessed to have that. And I want to thank John, and if anybody appreciates what he does on this network, donate to keep this network going, because it's a lifeline. And it's a way to educate others that are going through this, because if there's one thing I can do, it will be to educate people what I've learned, what I've seen, and how to handle things when they're scared to death and they don't know what to do and they don't have the resources I had. And I'm blessed. And I thank every single one of you for everything. But that's the major news on Thomas. There was one more thing I wanted to put out here. One of the things and the reasons why I want to be quiet. I'm reading this from the Texas courts. It's the 2013 County Clerk's Manual. And I lost my page here, so I'll get it real quick. In that, it tells them how to deal with foreign documents. And quite interesting, I think anybody that listens to what I'm going to read here in a second is interesting, to say the least. Foreign Judgments, a Uniform Enforcement of Foreign Judgments Act, Enforcement of Judgments or Other States. And I'm only going to go pretty quickly on this one. A foreign judgment is an order of a court of the United States or of another state which is entitled to full faith and credit in the courts of the state. That one line right there is from Civil Practices and Remedies Code, sections 35.001-35.008. It says a lot. What I'm doing is dealing with information the Secretary of State should be dealing with. I'm doing that without an agreement and without a treaty. It's mm-hmm. almost impossible. I'm dealing with a foreign state. They've captured mm-hmm. my husband. They've taken him to another nation state, which I called the county clerk, and she didn't know if they were a territory or state. It was quite funny. But I'm dealing with a foreign entity. Mm-hmm. I am foreign to the United States. Not the United mm-hmm. States of America, the United States.
Correct.
Right there in black and white, this is the county clerk's manual, 2013, to the state of Texas. I have not had time to go to all the county clerks in the nation. You can check your own state. But if you want to see it in black and white, it's right there. It's on page 81 of 216. So there was a lot of things that this court did not do. The next line I'm going to read for those of you that are a little more advanced to think on. And it's very short, Lori. Okay. The clerk shall file a foreign judgment which has been authenticated in the same manner as a judgment rendered by a court of competent jurisdiction of this state. It has the same effect and is subject to the same procedures, defenses, and proceeding as a judgment of a comparable court of this state. And I'll let you go to break.
Yes, and then you can continue with that, Lori, after we get back from this break. Hang with us, everyone.
If I could only have you near to breathe a sigh or two, I would be happy just to hold the hands I love on this winter night with you.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.